Well, if you're wanting to look at what we're doing, it's page 1050 in the church Bibles. Don't worry, there's more of that. Where that came from. So page 1050, Luke chapter 16 is our passage. Now, there are some weeks when Jesus just says things he should never have done, and I'm sure on reflection he would have worked out that there was much better ways of actually communicating his message. There are some times when he actually promotes a cause that is really beyond the pale. Have you ever come across those parables where you're taken aback and think, what on earth are you talking about, Jesus? Was that one of the times today when it was heard that actually having acting like a swindling manager is what we should be all aiming for? Well, before we press on any further, I want to tell you about one of the great sporting heroes of our time. Now, please forgive me if you're one of those people who doesn't like sport. I'm a sporting tragic. I could watch two cockroaches crawling up a wall and be quite content. Just put a contest on and I'm there. Not because I want to be part of the contest, but I just want to see, well, two people or even two cockroaches competing against each other. So it sort of does it for me. So I apologise if sporting analogies and stories don't work for you. But I suspect you'll know the name. There was a fantastic cyclist called Lance Armstrong. You know that name? You've heard of that name? Now, I like cycling, so it ticks both boxes. Cockroaches climbing up mountains and... People riding their bikes up mountains. Now, you remember Lance Armstrong had an incredible story, didn't he? He was a good cyclist. He was actually a world champion. Most people forget that. Early in his career. And then he got cancer. And came back from cancer even better. So he went from being a cyclist who won sometimes to a cyclist who just seemed to win whenever he wanted to. And particularly around the Tour de France. Now, the Tour de France is actually the world's largest annual sporting event. Most people don't realise that. It's a cycle race. The month of July, or 3 weeks in July, is the largest annual sporting event where over the course of 3 weeks, people compete over about 3,500 kilometres race. It's quite an epic challenge. And to win it once will mark you out as being a superstar of your generation. Australia's only ever had one Tour de France winner, the fantastic Cadel Evans. But Lance Armstrong came back from cancer so focused and dedicated that he won it once, twice. Well, he actually won it 7 times in a row. It's incredible, isn't it? 7 times in a row. But as the years went by, it became clear that all was not healthy in the state of Armstrong. That was a joke. Yeah. God. And eventually, people started to be able to tell stories of what was happening. And we know now, don't we, that he, in his relentless pursuit of winning the Tour de France, of winning 2, 3, 4 all the way through, would be taking progressively more and more doses of less and less easily detectable drugs. But as the stories continued on, we discovered that it was even more. In his ruthless pursuit of winning the Tour de France himself, not only did he impose this drug regime upon himself, he imposed it on everyone in his team. So if you rode for his team, you rode dope to the eyeballs. And that was very clear as we look back and see how his team rode. They ground everyone into the ground. Yet as the stories continued on, it made sense of the behaviour within the, well, a cycling group is called a peloton. It made sense of the behaviour within the peloton. So not only did they use their enhanced physical capacities to grind everyone into the road, the way that they behaved amongst the peloton was also brutal. They were ruthless in squashing anyone who might or want to dissent from what was going on, might want to tell another story. And so in a sense we can see, well, if we open up a dictionary and look up the word ruthless, well, the sort of person who'd come to mind, if there was a picture of someone with ruthless there, well, maybe Lance Armstrong's face should be there. We often think of that when we think of the term ruthless or being ruthless. Begs the question, what does it mean to be ruthful? But, well, maybe you can find someone else to answer that. Now, the story that Jesus told us today, the story that Sarah read for us today, is one that sounds all wrong. As we look at the story, as we hear the story, we see someone swindling their boss. They started out as a dodgy manager, already defrauding their boss. When finally they find out and give them the dignity of being able to, well, finish up well, trade out, as it were, they go even further. Oh, you've got a bill for 900 gallons of oil? Have it. 50% off today. 20% off the next bill. It just gets worse. And yet Jesus commends this person. He says, this is how you should act. It's quite confronting, isn't it? What on earth is Jesus getting on about? This ruthlessness of behaviour, this sense of perceiving what he needed to do. You remember, the story tells us that he realises he's just an office boy, a bit like me. His hands are too soft to actually go out and do an honest day physical work. He's too proud to be able to go out and beg. I'll just keep on going, doing what I'm doing, ruthlessly looking after myself. I'll go and make friends. It's intrigued me. Why would one get a 50% discount and one get a 20% discount? Well, I guess he perceived he could get more out of the other one. Ruthlessly going for that thing that he valued most. It hooks into that idea, doesn't it? Of seeing what you want and just going for it hard. Riding over the top of anyone who might be in your way. Well, there's another way of thinking about ruthlessness as well, isn't there? And let's use another sporting picture. You know, I had two great dreams growing up. One was to run in the 100 metres for Australia. I was actually okay as a sprinter. I got worse as the distance went on, so I was very, very good at 60 metres. I faded a bit by the time we got out to 100. But, well, my other dream was to be a star of the heavy metal scene. I now know that only one of those dreams will come true. But we've just witnessed the fastest person to have ever lived, Usain Bolt. Now, Nige, you're not easily embarrassed, I don't think. Go and stand on the corner of...
No water involved.
No, no water. No water.
Go and stand on the corner there. And you know
Usain Bolt? Yep. You do a Usain Bolt? Okay. Now turn around the other way. This is a race. This is how far Usain Bolt would have been ahead of me. This is the finish line. You do your finishing thing. Okay. Look, I was quite good at running. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... No. 7, 8, 9, 10. That's how far he would have beaten me. Here was someone who he was very, very, very good at what he did. Now the reality for Usain Bolt is that from about the age of 13, his life looked like this. Run, eat, sleep. And then run, and maybe lift some heavy weights in between, eat, sleep. Run, eat, sleep. Now think of all the things, all the good things that, well, an adolescent and a young adult and, well, a grown up adult, he didn't retire till he was into his 30s. Think about all the good things that you give up if you run, eat, sleep. All those things that you might have liked to have put your time in but ruthlessly put aside because actually you want to beat everyone else by an incredible distance. Now, this is our week of birthdays in our family. And so I'm in the middle of gorging myself on fantastic pizza and cheesecake. Isn't that just the best thing on earth? Usain Bolt, I doubt, would have ever eaten a meal of pizza and cheesecake because he was ruthlessly pursuing his goal, his aim. Now, unlike Lance Armstrong, he's actually, by all accounts, a very pleasant person. He's actually a kind human being. But here, he ruthlessly puts his eggs in one basket. Run. Eat some carrots. And sleep. Well, friends, Jesus is saying we need to ruthlessly pursue his kingdom. Like Usain Bolt, we need to see what is important and pursue it ruthlessly. Now, there are other ways that Jesus could have told this story. And we're going to stop for a moment just to think about how to read the parables. Jesus could have told this story in other ways that made much more sense, that didn't require him to praise up a dishonest manager. He could have said something like, look, there was a gardener who loved gardening so much that rain, hail or shine, doesn't matter whether it was freezing cold or stinking hot, whether it was pouring with rain or whether it was dry as a stick, they would go out and dig over their garden bed. They would pull out all the little weeds. They would jealously guard the seedlings as they came out. They would cover them over when the frosts were out. And they would pour drip by drip the precious water on their garden. At the end of the day, it bloomed. It means the same thing. Someone who jealously focused on what they wanted. But tell me, which story would put you back in your shoes, would make you rock back on your heels? That nice story of the gardener working hard to make their garden flourish, or the shrewd manager, the dishonest manager who swindled the boss because he was so focused, so ruthless in pursuing his aim? Well, folks, I suspect it's actually the way Jesus told it, which actually tells us something about how to read the parables, because the parables, as we've been learning throughout this time in working through Luke, are ways of Jesus being able to paint word pictures of something we haven't experienced yet, something that we certainly haven't experienced in its, well, in its fullness, in its great depth of clarity. Jesus is saying, well, it's a bit like this and a bit like that. And he will often put a twist in the story, not because he thinks the details have a correspondence with something that we have now, but because he's saying what you're going into works so differently to your experience now that I need to shock you into thinking about the differences. So that's the first thing. Jesus could have told a much nicer story, but then we would miss the shocking difference with the way we just go about our life, being carried along in the stream of life. It would have just washed over us. Yet here Jesus has told this story, seeming to praise up this dishonest manager, saying actually it's his ruthlessness to prune aside everything else, to push aside everything else, just to focus on what he needed to do to make life right, that he's praising up. So then, how is it that we act with that same ruthlessness, not to defraud our bosses, but to be ruthless in pursuit of this kingdom that Jesus brought in? This is where we get to verse 10, where Jesus says, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. See, friends, where we are different to this dishonest manager is that God has actually given us a world. Well, actually, we're very similar to the dishonest manager in this. The world doesn't belong to us, does it? God's given us incredible things, good, bad or otherwise, but incredible beauty, incredible provision. He's also, for those of us who are Christian, given us an insight into what he's doing. Now, for some of us whose faith is large, we might be able to perceive great breadth of what God is up to. For some of us, we might just glimpse little pictures of it here and there. But either way, we are beneficiaries of something that we don't own, something that belongs to someone else, something that we have been entrusted with, even though we don't own it. And so Jesus says, how can you be entrusted with something of your own if I can't trust you with what I've given you now? Or, in the words of the parable, how ruthless will you be in pursuing my goal, given that I've given you so much to work with? Now, the great wonder is that there's the promise of sharing in this kingdom when it comes in its fullness, not as people who have been given tools to use or people something to participate in as workers, but rather an inheritance as something to own. But in the meantime, how can we be trusted with very little when we'll be inheriting a lot? And so we get to verse 13. No servant can serve two masters. Either they will hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, folks, you're in the sad position of being the third group that I've preached this sermon to over the course of this morning and earlier this week, which means you get the tired mat at the end. But I've used a different illustration to how that plays out in life to the different congregations, because often when we hear this parable and hear Jesus explaining this parable, we only talk about money. So for one of the congregations, I talked about, well, the change that happens when physically you're no longer able to do the things that you had been in the habit of doing as part of your discipleship, part of acting generously and ruthlessly to live as a disciple of Jesus. With another congregation, I talked about, well, when suddenly you have time, discretionary time on your hands, when you're in the position of being able to stop what's, well, you've had to be driven by for years. Maybe your work has got to the stage where you can give up some of the work. Maybe you've got more money than you had thought about for a while, so you're able to, well, not be on the treadmill of a 9-to-5. I think both were fitting for those other groups. And I've been thinking, well, what's fitting as an application for us here in Family Church? And I suspect it's not discretionary time for many. I suspect it's not discretionary money for many. But what is it? Well, before I suggest something that I think might be a way that it impacts our lives now, let me tell you of one of my experiences of being a parent. And that is, you think you've got it nailed until suddenly everything changes. Those who are parents, or those who have been an auntie or a faithful friend of kids growing up, I'm sure you've had that experience. You think, yep, I finally got used to this. I know what's coming around the corner. And then it changes, doesn't it? Well, often our life is just like that, isn't it? That we get used to being living our life as Christians, with habits that promote being ruthless in our devotion to Jesus, yearning after the kingdom of God, and we get used to putting in place habits that are a bit like that Usain Bolt. We value a certain way of going about things, a certain way of using our resources, and yet suddenly things change and all of those good habits go out the window. So friends, I wonder where that is for you. Now, I suspect that unlike an older group, where physical capacity and that change of being able to be really active to help others to not being physically able to, I suspect, as I said, that's not your issue. Nor possibly even having discretionary money. But I think actually the draw of children is so hard. Whether it's your own children or whether it's grandchildren. Because when children come along, there are so many good things to do. So many great demands upon time. So many aspirations that we have that they can so easily chew up our time. And none of them are bad.